Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the federal land banks when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, which was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. These benefits, such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, our last president, George Bush, said that what Americans wanted was jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution or Bill of Rights and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. There's no money in public business, and there's no money in employments like jobs, jobs, jobs. That's why I contend that it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance and learned how to collect those benefits of the Old Covenant contract and to collect those benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's real property instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on our CD Home School for Adults? That's our business school. And while you're at it, why don't you order that free general law CD package at the same time? That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. It may not be for you. And it's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's free. Then you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives. That's the archives page. And you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org, and go to the archives page. Hey, we're reviewing a book here called Night Came to the Farms of the Great Plains. It's written by a guy named Raymond North, and it's put out by Acres USA. And last time, I showed you that there's a Ponzi scheme going on here between this federal land bank and then your federal land bank association, and then the tax writing committees in Congress and the IRS. Now, it takes real genius to put this thing together, and the guy that uncovered this is this fellow that I'm telling you about. It's Raymond North. He's a CPA. He discovered it accidentally. He was turning out about 300 farmers' tax returns a year, and after the Congress had changed the law concerning depreciation allowance, he found that the farmers that he was doing these tax returns for were going bankrupt as an operation of law based upon their farming operation that they'd been operating all these years. But this change from 10-year depreciation to 3 bankrupted them. And he couldn't believe his eyeballs. Now, he, in his book, says, what foolishness. You know, here you are trying to help the farmers, and you're passing this legislation that actually harms them. Well, okay, Mr. North, you discovered the Ponzi scheme, but it's not a mistake and it's not an accident. And I showed you that. Here in the protocols written clear back in 1884, there was a program designed to do just exactly that. Now, the people that are doing this can't let you know what they're doing. In other words, it's kind of like a spy who's behind enemy lines and he's spying. He can't go to the people he's spying on and saying, hey, I'm a spy, I'm in here from Germany and I'm looking for information. He comes in here and he says, I'm a loyal American and I'm just in here trying to help the war effort. And then while he's doing that, he's gathering information. He's a fifth columnist. He's an undercover agent. He's a spy. That's part and parcel with war. And that's the way the game is played. I was watching the news the other night, and they were talking about this thing of Soviet spies penetrating our institutions through computers. This guy is General Hayden. He used to be the head of the CIA and the NSA. And so the reporter said to him, well, does the United States do the same thing? And he said, well, of course we do, and we're the best in the world. Now, you see, if the Chinese are busting into our computer databases by hacking, that's bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil. If the United States is hacking into the Chinese database, well, that's just because we're the best in the world. That's what spying's all about. So it really depends on what side you're working on. So in this case, the secret societies, which there's a number of them, they have an agenda, they've got a goal, and it's world domination. They want to rule the world. The Muslims want to rule the world. And the communists, they want to rule the world. The Chinese want to rule the world. Adolf Hitler wanted to rule the world. The learned elders want to rule the world. Everybody's been after that prize. You know, that's what they're after. So now we're in a phase of world history approaching the end of the age, where a number of countries are armed with nuclear weapons, and we're on the verge of World War III. The Second Coming is in the indefinite future. But you know, take a look at Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, and you ought to be able to see from that, hey, we're getting closer every day. And so here comes this guy Raymond North along here, and he says, hey, let me show you a little piece to the puzzle. And the little piece to the puzzle is the destruction of American agriculture, which has already been accomplished. They've done it. Past tense. It's gone. All you little farmers are off in the city now, trying to make a living. But you're off the land, and that was the objective. The objective is to put the land into unconditional subordination and keep the taxes high. And it says here, the best means to attain this is to increase the taxes and mortgage indebtedness. The purpose for the land banks is to bury you people in debt. We'll see that a little bit better here as we progress along. All right, now several people who have read this manuscript have commented that the $5,000 that we mentioned in the last program is actually in the coffers of the Federal Land Bank Association, because the farmer gave the $5,000 check to the association after endorsing it. That's correct. But the money did not build up the system's reserves, because the association immediately made out a check for $5,000 to the land bank in Wichita and sent it to them. So you got 5,000 in, 5,000 out. So the Federal Land Bank Association writes a check and mails it to the Federal Land Bank in Wichita to pay for the stock. So the Federal Land Bank Association has a bank account of zero. Now, it's a sleight-of-hand Ponzi scheme, and you have to see the numbers in front of you when you get the book. It's on page 83. This is a 1 in 100. There's lots of books out there, boys and girls, on parity and the farm crisis. I mean, my God, there's guys writing farm books like you can't believe. This guy hit the nail on the head. This guy hit the jackpot. He figured out the way the scheme works. And that's no small trick. And if he hadn't been a CPA, and if he hadn't been working for these very farmers, and if he hadn't been making out their income tax, he never would have figured it out either. And a dummy like me, I couldn't have figured it out at high noon with directions. And I don't deny it. But I can see it now right in front of me, because he laid it out for us. And this has been going on for 80 years. They started this back in 1920. They've never had a losing year. They come up with a new farm bill every year. And every year, more and more of you farmers hit the road. They didn't throw all you farmers off the land, you know, in the first 5 years. You'd have figured out there's something rotten in Denmark. But by just little by little, every year. So from 44 million, you went down to 15 million between 1920 and 50. So in 30 years, they reduced your numbers by almost two-thirds. Then from 1950 to the present day, they've removed you 15 million farmers down to 1,900,000. Now, the ultimate goal in the United States is to establish about 200,000 super corporate farms in the country. They're going to winnow this down even more. So if you're some big farmer and you think that you've got the world by the short hairs, no, you're missing the boat here, partner. They're just using you just like they used the little farmers in the past. And as time progresses along, they'll foreclose on you. They'll manipulate the prices up, and then they'll manipulate the prices down, and then they'll cut you off at the pass, foreclose on you, and then sell your farm, no matter how big or how small it is, to the big fish. This thing's going to be winnowed down to about 200,000 farms. Now, everything is exactly the same as before the loan. In time, the Federal Reserve Banks, the Federal Land Banks, became so brazen that they didn't even write the checks. Only a debit and credit entry appeared on the loan closing statement. Now, when a commercial bank wants to build up its reserves, it does this by issuing common or preferred stock, and it will not make a loan to purchase the stock, because such a loan does not increase the reserves. Each new stock owner is required to have the money or borrow it somewhere else. At the present time, there are a number of commercial banks that are in very poor financial condition, and the federal controller of the currency who regulates these national banks, or the state banking commissioners who regulate the state banks, will issue an order for the bank to get new money and build up its reserves. The bank then issues preferred stock. The bank will not make a loan to buy this new stock. It can't do this and build up its reserves at the same time. That's the sleight of hand trick. Now, when the Federal Land Banks got into financial trouble in 1984, they had to go to Congress and ask for a bailout. Now, many people wanted to know why they didn't use the money they got on the sale of the stock to the farmers. Now, the reason's plain to see when we see it diagrammed out. The banks never got the cash for these stock sales. These sales were on credit. There was nothing in reserve to fall back on. Second, this stock is now generally considered to be absolutely worthless, and most of it is. In 1986, the author of the Farm Credit Act of 1971, Senator Henry L. Bellman of Oklahoma, ran for governor. His federal land bank loans, all made after the passing of the 1971 Act that he sponsored, became a bone of contention in the political campaign. When he was asked how he felt about it, Bellman replied in this manner. He said, quote, "I have over $50,000 of that stock. I guess that it's not worth much now, and I'm not proud of it," unquote. Now, this should tell you what it's worth. He was the author of the bill. Now, since 1971, the federal land banks consistently used this stock as a come-on to get farmers to take out loans. Private insurance companies, by way of contrast, do not use a stock transaction as a gimmick to lure farmers. Nor do insurance companies require that the farmer buy life insurance on the loan. But the federal land banks tell the farmers that they can lend money cheaper than any other lender because they are the government. Now, here is the federal instrumentality theory at work. So when it benefits them, they say, hey, we're the government. We're here to help. They then tell the farmer that this stock will be very valuable in the future, that it's a good investment. One farmer near Lamont, Oklahoma, was told that he should buy the stock and hold on to it because it would be worth a great deal when his children went to college, and he would be able to use the proceeds from its sale to cover their tuition. Thus, the Federal Land Bank induced farmers to borrow from it rather than the private insurance companies. Land bank stock has been worthless since 1984 because the whole federal land bank system is broke and it depends on Congress just to stay open. All loans made by the federal land bank system since 1984 have sold this worthless stock, and the bank officers responsible for doing it knew it was worthless when they did it. If this had been a private business, they would have been indicted for violating the securities laws of the U.S. government. Such laws prohibit the sale of all unlicensed and worthless securities, and each company that sells securities must abide by these laws. At the same time, the Federal Land Bank in Wichita was conducting its affairs in this disgraceful fashion. The Kansas Gas and Electric Company, headquartered in Wichita, Kansas, made certain that all of its stocks and bonds met the minimum requirement of the federal and state securities laws as required. So the Kansas Gas and Electric, as this electric company is known, hired a battery of attorneys and accountants who make certain that the company complied with all of the securities laws. Anyone who invests in Kansas Gas and Electric will reap a good income. Yet anyone who invests in stocks in the Federal Land Bank of Wichita will reap nothing. A dead loss. Now, I can find no case where they ever alerted the farmer that it was worthless. When I get to the county courthouses and look at a series of cases, I find that some federal land banks have, in general, refused to give the farmer anything for his stock because it's worthless. Farmers have been refused anything for this stock in several of the banks, and in at least one case, the Federal Land Bank of Wichita simply canceled the stock. The farmer got nothing, even though his loan was paid in full. Now, state law required that the stock be sold at a sheriff's sale after being advertised and the farmer notified that the sale would be held. That was not done. Anywhere else, this would have been considered theft. It is also an abuse of the judicial process. Third, this stock transfer is nothing but a legal scam. It causes the farmer to pay interest on an amount of money that he never received. When the loan in the above example was closed, the farmer would sign a mortgage for $100,000. However, he would be given a check for only $95,000. So he's paying interest on $100,000, but he receives $95,000. He thinks that he has a $5,000 stock certificate, but it's really valueless. This increased the interest expense to the farmer, and it increased the interest income to the Federal Land Bank. Now, this has caused some very bad effects. First, it created funds which allowed the Federal Land Banks to build huge buildings for their operations. The bank at Wichita, Kansas is so plush that it is fit for a Roman emperor, not a wheat farmer. It has rugs in it that are luxurious. Its interior and exterior are plush beyond any necessity. The bank is losing money hand over fist, as a farmer would say. The associations have likewise overbuilt. For example, the Federal Land Bank Association in Pratt, Kansas, is so large that the cars of the officers and employees are parked under a carport so that they can come and go without getting their feet wet during storms. All of this has to be paid for by the farmers. The association building at Enid, Oklahoma, is plush beyond reason. It is built 1.5 blocks from the most expensive private residence ever built in northwest Oklahoma. This is the Champlin Mansion built by the late H.H. Champlin of the oil fortune. His mansion was built in the 1930s when labor was cheap, and it was built to provide jobs for unemployed people. It is on a through street of the city and is possibly one of the busiest streets on the Great Plains. Why the land bank would build there is anyone's guess, but a former employee said that it was because they wanted to get as close to the Champlin Mansion as they could. In other words, the association building was built where it is for the snob appeal. The officers could sell this facility and relocate elsewhere in cheaper quarters, but they refuse because they can always get all of the money they want from the federal government. In Wichita, Kansas, the Federal Land Bank building is just a short distance from the modest headquarters building of the Kansas Gas and Electric Company, which makes money. The Federal Land Bank Association building in Yankton, South Dakota, is plush beyond words. It is losing money hand over fist. Yet, just a few blocks away is the building that houses the Gurney Seed and Nursery Company, which is the largest seed and garden company on the Great Plains. The Gurney building was built in four different sections at four different times. The Gurney company would build a section at a time, and when it outgrew the facility, it would then build an extension as its business grew. This continued as they outgrew it again and again. There are three different kinds of colors of bricks in the building, and one extension is a modern prefab. It gives an odd appearance to the building, for sure. They've outgrown the entire building, and yet they stay put. The company is making good profit. Now, the Federal Land Bank Association building in Aberdeen, South Dakota, is located in the northwest section of the city, which is the richest and most exclusive area in town. Most businesses here are housed in newly constructed buildings. This Federal Land Bank Association building is equipped with solar heating devices. Solar heating works well in hot desert regions such as El Paso, Texas, or Albuquerque, New Mexico. But it is useless and worthless in South Dakota, where the winters are long and cold. It is common for the temperature to stay below freezing for several months in these northern areas, and during the summer the weather is hot and dry. Solar heating is useless because air conditioning is the main factor. Now, the Federal Land Bank Association building in Marysville, Kansas, is the plushest thing in town. At Ponca City, Oklahoma, will be found the most expensive private residence ever built on the Great Plains. It was built by the governor and oil man, the late E.W. Marland. The Marland Mansion cost $5.5 million in the 1920s. Today it would cost about $100 million to replace it, and the Ponca City Federal Land Bank Association building is just down the road a few blocks. There's a consistent pattern of placing these bank buildings just as close as possible to the richest part of town. This is not what a wheat farmer needs, but this is what all of the wheat farmers are paying for. Any one of these federal land banks and their associations can be housed cheaper almost anywhere else. The only place where I found a federal land bank trying to live within its income was at North Platte, Nebraska. Here, the local association moved out of a newly constructed expensive shopping mall to cheaper quarters. Now, these banks started to collapse in 1984. They have had 6 years to economize, but they have refused. The only way I know that this can be stopped is to cut off their money from the government and abolish the system. Now, that's quite a statement. Let me put my mark here in the margin. If you want to reform this, you're not going to reform it by the people that are the abusers of it. This is what we've been trying to do. We're trying to vote the Democrats out and the Republicans in. But it was the Republicans under George Bush that brought about the collapse to start with. And if you are a Republican and that makes you mad, well, okay, Bill Clinton was before George Bush. And then before Bill Clinton, there was George Bush and Ronald Reagan. And then if that makes you bad, well, then there was the Democrat, Jimmy Carter. Well, if Carter makes you mad, well, then there was the Republican Ford and Nixon. You see, it doesn't make any difference, boys and girls, what Republican or Democratic party is in office. The policy is always the same. It never changes. It hasn't changed since 1920. Now, this policy is working well for the bankers. It's working well for the agribusiness companies like Archer Daniels Midland and Cargill and Pillsbury and so on. It's just not working for you wheat farmers, and that's because it's designed to destroy you. That's the purpose behind it. Now, it's not just you that they're after. Hell, they're after all of us. The objective here is to destroy the United States of America and meld it into the New World Order. And that program goes clear back to Genesis chapter 11, when God confounded the languages and scattered everybody abroad on the face of the earth, which began the national, or the nation, the national system. Now what we're trying to do is to abolish this nationalistic pride, this nationalistic system, and convert it into a unitarian system where all the nations of the world are going to work as one nation with one president, one body. It'll be run through the United Nations. You'll pay your taxes no matter what country you live in, and your taxes will go to support this new world order, this new world government. And it's going to work for a short period of time. God himself says, yeah, they're going to succeed in their goal. They will foment a World War III. And after all of the chaos and the destruction of this nuclear bomb war and the famine and disease that is engendered by it, they'll succeed in putting their government together. Then the Messiah is going to return, and he's going to put a stop to it before they would destroy all life from off the planet. That's the plan. Check it out in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Now, if you'll take a look at the sumptuous modality by which these banks operate, take a look at your politics. As I speak, the president's wife just returned from Spain. Now, here we are in a recession. That's what they call it, recession. I call it a depression. And the reason that I use the word D, you know, the D word, is because the numbers are the same as they were, close to what they were in the 1930s. Well, the president's wife went over to Spain. Now, she stayed in a hotel that cost $6,000 a night. Yeah, $6,000 a night. Now, they were quick to point out that the president's wife was not spending taxpayer money. Well, that made me feel real good, because I wouldn't feel good, you know, paying $6,000 a night for the president's wife to be staying in, you know, the Ritz, and I'm over here unemployed. But here's the kicker. She flew an Air Force jet over there, and that Air Force jet flying over there cost $180,000 each way. Then she had to have Secret Service men to protect her. They rented 60 rooms at $600 a night. That's $3,600 a night. Ain't it? well, wait, more than that. $600 a night times 60. And that's $36,000 a night. That's five times more than her room costs, six times more. All right, so I just wanted to point that out, that while you and I are over here scrambling to pay the mortgage and to make ends meet, and while our houses are being foreclosed on, these Illuminists, the bankers, and the president is one of the Illuminists. Let's wake up and smell the coffee. And Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi, you know, they're in on the scam also. These bailouts in the trillions of dollars, you know, these are the people that have your power of attorney. These are the people that went there and enacted these laws and these bills and gave all this money away and then saddled you with the debt. Hey, these guys are living right on top of the world, aren't they? All right. So let's pay attention now to what's going on. The name of the book, again, is called Night Came to the Farms of the Great Plains. Raymond North, put out by Acres USA. Acres' phone number is 1-800-355-5313. Again, that's 1-800-355-5313. Now, I rate this 1 in 100, and I rate it 1 in 100 because of Chapter 4 on the Federal Land Bank Scam. All right, there's another story in here. Let me just pass this one on. Have you heard of Reaganomics? Because he's got a chapter in here on Reaganomics. It's a longer chapter than this, and I kind of thought to myself, should I bring in Reaganomics or should I bring in the land bank? And I think the land bank is a more important topic to talk about. But Reaganomics was another scam, another genius scam. I mean, you talk genius now. I mean, these guys have sharpened their pencils on both ends, and they put together farm bills, tax bills, and farm bills, and they put that thing together, and by God, it made it look like we were getting tax reductions. You were working, and you thought, my God, I'm getting more money in my pay envelope, and I'm getting a tax reduction. God bless the Republicans and tax cuts. Oh, no. No, you got a tax increase. All of us got a tax increase. No tax reduction under Reaganomics. No tax reduction under Bush. Tax increase. And he lays that out and says, well, let me show you how the numbers work out. When the story is written in USA Today, and when you listen to the sound bites at the political conventions, it sounds like the Republicans are cutting your taxes. When at the exact same time they're raising your taxes, they're telling you we're lowering them, and you get more money in your pay envelope, but when you get to the end of the year, you get less money because they took it. Yep, that's the way that game was played. And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour, then please go to our website, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's eight schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. And then finally, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, those are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing a book from Acres USA. The number to call to pick up a copy, 1-800-355-5313, a 1 in 100 read. This one is top of the line. Paperback probably cost you $12-15. Hell, if it cost you $100, it'd be worth $100. Just Chapter 4. It's the understanding. Now, remember God told us in, I believe it was in Daniel 12. Let me flip over here and show you a little something. Daniel was a prophet, and a fair to middling good one. And then he wrote a little book here, 12 chapters long. And at the end of the book, after he'd written this prophecy, he said to Big Mike, he said, "Hey, and I heard, and I didn't understand. Then said I, O my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? Hey, tell me the answer to this. How's this thing work out?" And Big Mike said, "You go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and tried. But the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand." So I looked at that and I said, "Well, God, I'd like to be one of these wise guys. What do I have to do to understand this?" Now, as you read a book like this, you can see that this guy's understanding isn't total, but his understanding of this one little piece of the puzzle, this federal land bank, it's superior to everybody. He figured it out. Now, of course, the insiders knew it. They know the answer to the riddle, but you know, these are the guys, these are the spies. They're not telling us. The spy doesn't walk up to you and say, "Hey, I'm a spy." He comes up to you and says, "No, I'm a loyal American. How can I help? I'm from the government." Then when he wins your confidence, then he gets the information, uses it against you, and kills you with it, which was his goal from the beginning. But when there's a soldier out in the field, and he's over there 100 yards away, and he's wearing a foreign uniform, and he's got a gun, and you're sitting over here, see, you know that that's your enemy over there. And you're guarding against that guy. I mean, you got your eyeballs on him. He ain't going to kill you. You've got him in your sights. The guy that's going to kill you is the guy that comes up and says, "Here, I'm bringing you up a hot lunch. And I'm your friend. And I'm here to help you. I'm from the government." And then when you turn your back, he stabs you. There's very little defense against that kind of fifth columnist now. And that's what we're working against here, is these fifth columnists. So, to understand this, a good understanding of all they who do his commandments. Now go to Psalm 111, verse 10, I believe it is. 111:10. A good understanding of all they who do his commandments. Well, then the opposite to that is a poor understanding of all they who do not do his commandments. So the ace up your sleeve, the trick to this, we make our change. We shift over to the Ten Commandment model. Now we can get a little better understanding. Now we can start making some intelligent plans to save ourselves out of this mess. Now listen, going on here on page 88, he says, "This interest scam has been used in states such as Oklahoma, which used to have very strict laws on what a financial institution could charge for interest. Charging interest on $100,000 but actually loaning out only $95,000 gives an economic advantage to the Federal Land Bank over commercial banks and insurance companies that could not and did not engage in such criminal activity. The land banks can escape the effects of state laws on usury." And here's how this system works. "Any 10 or more farmers can meet and set up a federal land bank association. This would be the governing body in their neighborhood. It would be officered by them. They would hire or fire any employee of the association. The association would be local. It would not be in a distant city. So here I must clearly distinguish between the federal land bank and the federal land bank associations. The banks in the Great Plains are in Minneapolis, Omaha, Wichita, and Austin. The associations are in cities like Ponca City, Enid, Clinton, and Weatherford, Oklahoma, Pratt and Maryville, Kansas, North Platte, Nebraska, Yankton and Aberdeen, South Dakota, Bismarck, North Dakota, and Perryton, Texas. That's to name a few. Now, if a member wants a loan, he applies to the association, not to the Federal Land Bank. So the Federal Land Bank Association acts as a front, a straw man for the Federal Land Bank. Now, this local association has a committee that interviews the farmer and writes up the loan application. Now, this committee decides whether the loan is good or bad, or whether it should even be made. Now, prior to 1971, the local committee knew every loan applicant because the association was in a small village, and they knew what kind of a farmer this applicant was. They knew whether this guy beat his wife or not. They knew whether or not he drank or not. And if so, how much does he drink and what brand? Now, you cannot imagine how much the residents of our small villages know about each other. So let me just illustrate this for you. I'm going to illustrate this by recounting an event that I once experienced. Now, I was born and reared near the small village of Douglas, Oklahoma. Our people lived there, and we knew everybody else, and where every nickel was. The town was home to about 75 people. Now, one local wag counted them and observed there are 72 people, two bears, and a fox. Now, at that time, the town had an elderly couple living there with the last name of Bear, and an elderly lady there by the name of Fox, hence the two bears and a fox. Now, I had some tax business with a lady in town one day, so I drove out to see her. Let's call her Mrs. Tarker. So when I got to Mrs. Tarker's home, I discovered that she wasn't there, so I drove on to the local filling station. Well, in the big city, this is called a service station, but out here in the countryside, in the small villages, there's a vocabulary that goes with the village. So what people in Kansas City call a service station, the people down home call a filling station. Well, in Kansas City, there is a rail center, and in Chicago, there is a rail terminal. Down in Douglas, they call it the railroad depot, and so on. So I drove on to the filling station. Well, the attendant came out to the car with a big grin on his face. Well, he's married to my fifth cousin. "Hi, Ray, how are you?" he asked. And I said, "I'm fine." And we caught up on family news and gossip. So then I asked about Mrs. Tarker. And he said, "Well, she ain't home, but you can go on over to the Brownings," he said. "What's she doing over there?" I asked. "Oh, she just went over there to be sociable. They're having tea and sugar cookies. Go on over. They'd be glad to have you." "Well, when did she go over there?" I asked. "Well, about 10 minutes ago." Well, so it goes out here on the Great Plains, in the Great Plains Village. A lady goes to visit another person in town, and less than 10 minutes later, everyone knows about it. They know it's social, not a business meeting. They even know what kind of cookies are being eaten and what's being served for refreshments. Not only that, this expert extended an invitation for me to visit another person in her private home to participate in this social. And such is life in a small village. Now, can you imagine anyone in New York City knowing or caring about what the neighbor does or what the neighbor eats or would invite you to go on over to the neighbor's to have refreshments? Well, when a farmer went to his local Federal Land Bank Association, the committee knew a great deal about him. And this is important in understanding how these associations worked and why they failed after 1971. You see, the Farm Credit Act gave the district federal land banks more control over the local associations, believing that bigger is always better. So the federal land banks forced all of the small associations out of the system. Before 1971, there were more than 800 of these associations scattered all over the country. A few years after 1971, there were less than 380 that had survived. They're too large for good credit work. Now, the original Act of Congress in 1916 provided that when a farmer borrowed money from his local federal land bank association, he jointly and severally guaranteed all of the loans that were on the books and all that would be made thereafter. Well, jointly and severally means that the federal land bank can move against the assets of one farmer to pay the debts of another farmer. For example, let's suppose that Farmer White borrows $100,000, Farmer Green borrows $100,000, and Farmer Black borrows $50,000. The total amount borrowed is $250,000. Now, an ordinary person would take this to mean that Farmer Black owes $50,000, but according to the federal land bank documents the farmer signed when he closed his loan, he is responsible for the repayment of the whole $250,000. This is just one of the clubs that the federal land banks used to beat over the heads of the farmers. Now, that wasn't true before 1971, because the committees that operated the small federal land bank associations knew all of their borrowers, and they turned down the bad ones. The guys that beat their wives and drank Jack Daniels, they didn't make loans to. If the loan applicant was a drunk, they knew it and turned him down. They didn't want to be held liable for the debts of their local drunks. And if a farmer couldn't hang on to his money, his loan application met the same fate. It was virtually a foolproof system, and some of their records are truly amazing. For example, here's an example. A member of the Federal Land Bank Association in Mansfield, Missouri, that was formed in 1917 and never had a loan loss until it was consolidated into a larger unit. From 1917 to 1932, it employed the same official secretary. This secretary, she went over all the loan applications, and she ran the office in an old building on Main Street where the rent was cheap and her books balanced to the penny. Neither her handling of the money nor her collection tactics were ever questioned. There were no questionable entries on her ledgers. She loaned out millions of dollars, and there was never a farm foreclosure. There was never a lawsuit over a loan that she made. Her name was Laura Ingalls Wilder, the lady that wrote the books, Little House on the Prairie. Well, she rode a hack down from South Dakota in 1894 during a decade of hard times. She had a fourth grade education, all of it from frontier schools, and she was never taught by a licensed degree-holding teacher. And yet she ran the system in Mansfield, Missouri, properly and profitably. Now, let's contrast that with the performance of the college-trained loan officers who have operated the system there after 1971. The Federal Land Bank Association of Mansfield, Missouri, has been consolidated into a larger unit. And guess what? It is losing money like there's no tomorrow, hand over fist. And there wouldn't be if Congress wasn't propping up the system with new money. It would have already gone out of business as being bankrupt. Here's another example. The Federal Land Bank Association at Jett, Oklahoma, operated profitably from the day that it was opened until it was consolidated into a four-county district headquartered in Enid, Oklahoma, in the 1970s. This local association was so small, it didn't even have an office. When a meeting was necessary, they met in the community room of the local bank, or at a cafe, or in one of the churches. They never lost a penny. Well, how well have things worked out for this new, larger association? Well, it has lost money by the crateful. It cannot make a profit. It cannot operate properly. It oppresses the local farmers. And the local failure of the farm credit system as owned and operated by the federal government is recasting these federal land bank associations into large geographical units in which the loan officers and others do not know the farmers that they're dealing with. And also it can be noted that some of these college-trained loan officers have now bled the system of cash by using various scams that I'm going to get into later. And when these larger associations were formed, the officers and committees were called upon to evaluate the credit worthiness of each loan applicant, and in many cases credit was extended when little or nothing was known about the applicant. When I was in a filling station one day in Douglas, my cousin told me that Aunt Pearl's swinging rib seemed to be doing a little better and Uncle Billy's kidney seemed to be doing a little worse. Do you think you could get that kind of information as a stranger? Do you think a loan officer could get that kind of information out of one of these villagers? Well, I'm here to tell you he certainly could not. So, when a loan officer based in a large city of a merged association goes out to the countryside to see what the farmers are up to, the visit will not yield any information, and certainly nothing that's derogatory to any local farmer. If the loan officer asked whether a farmer drank too much, he would probably be told that no one knows what a man would do if he smelled the cap of a beer can. Nor will any light be shed on the farmer's operating methods. The loan officer can only get back into his expensive imported sports car and depart in a cloud of dust. Now, every foreclosed farm loan in Alfalfa County, Oklahoma, was made after the passage of the Farm Credit Act of 1971, and the forced mergers of the small local federal land bank associations with the urban land banks. Every farm loan was made by an officer who didn't know what was going on or who he was dealing with. Now, watch what happened. They start this program up in 1916. They put on joint and several liability. The farmers are very careful who they loan to. 1971, Congress changes the act. They leave the joint and several liability on the books. But they change the act, merge the associations. Now they send out these college-trained jerks who go out there and make loans to any and everybody. And the whole thing goes belly up. And guess what? All the farmers have signed the contract, haven't they? Joint and several liability. Join the club for bankruptcy. Boys and girls, that's not an accident. That was a carefully thought-out scam. And the farmers fell for it. The farmers, they fell into it. Hell, I would have fallen into it. Who would have suspected? You know, the guy from the loan department of the land bank says, I'm here to help. I just want to make this loan. I want to help you buy this land over here and make money and be a happy, successful farmer. No, he doesn't. No. What he's trying to do is to create bad loans so that the association will go bankrupt and can be taken over by the bigger association in Wichita. That's the purpose behind this. It's to make as many bad loans as possible so that the system will collapse. Now let's go back here a minute and take a look at what happened with Alan Greenspan. In the Clinton years, to get the economy cooking, you know, after the recession in 1990, they opened up the dollar lending spigot. And they come out here and they're making these liar loans and all of these bad loans to all of these people that never should have bought a house, couldn't afford it, and couldn't make the payments. And they sucked all these people into it. Okay, now, when these people can't pay anymore, the system collapses. The banks go to the Congress and they say, hey, you got to bail us out because if you don't, the whole system's going to collapse. Congress, who's in on the scam, says, oh, yeah, we got to do that. And George Bush gave him $1 trillion or right at that, remember, before he left office. Barack Obama comes in and says, hey, $1 trillion ain't enough. Let's give him another $1 trillion. Then they go a step further, and they, They start raising the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Then they come back with this national health care insurance scam. Now get this. Think about this. You're already bankrupt, and then you're going to go out and test drive a Lexus? That's where the United States of America is. We're bankrupt, and we're out here passing some new multi-trillion dollar health care initiative out here. Huh? I mean, you talk about insane. Well, yeah, it's insane. But the people that designed this insanity, they're not insane at all. These people know exactly what they're doing. They're doing this to bankrupt the nation. They're fifth columnists. They're Republicans and Democrats. They are skull and bones members. They are trilateralists. They are Council on Foreign Relations members. They're Bilderbergers. They're international Zionists. They're international bankers. And more. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Those are the big ones. Now, boys and girls, whether you're a wheat farmer or you're a Joe Sixpack mechanic over here, you know I'm Mr. Goodrich. You know, all of us are involved in this, whether we like it or not. We're all passengers on the great ship America. And our captain is deliberately running this ship at full power straight into 5,000 square miles of icebergs and telling us that the reason we don't need any lifeboats is because this ship is unsinkable. I would like to point you to the Roman Empire. Wasn't that unsinkable? Or the Egyptians under the pharaohs, weren't they unsinkable? Or the Babylonians or the Greeks under Alexander and Philip, weren't those empires unsinkable? Well, you know, that's what they thought. And then when we look back in history, we find out, uh-oh. Now, the people of America, when they run us into bankruptcy, you know, we'll still be here, you know. Just like the people of Argentina, they ran them into bankruptcy, you know, and they're still there. They're just living poor. They're just under a heavier debt burden. They're just over here working harder to pay their taxes, to pay the international bankers for their slavery. And that's where we're headed. Now, I'd like to suggest that we think about making a change here. And that's what I did. I looked at this some years back, and I said, hey, I think I'm going to make a change. And I did. We got an ace up our sleeves. And that ace is over here in 2 Chronicles 7:14. Let me read it to you. I'm almost out of time here. I don't want to run over time like I did last time. See if I can find it. 2 Chronicles 7:14 says, if my people, which are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear them from heaven and I'll forgive their sins and I'll heal their land. Now, that's not the whole nation. You know, all the people of the country, they're not going to do that. But there are some people in the land that might do that. And if you're one of them, start thinking about it. Because if you're in debt, you're going upside down. And the first thing we got to do is get out of debt. They buried us in debt for the express purpose of destroying us. Now, that's the bad news. The good news is, you're only 36 months away from $100,000 in gold coin sitting in a hole in the ground practicing the Ten Commandment model. I've demonstrated that over the years, and so have my students. And if you're of average intelligence, you don't have to be real smart. You know, you can work your way out of this debt. There's a solution to debt. And if you get out of that debt, then you can start to make some money. You can start to do something constructive, and you can start to work for yourself instead of working for these bankers. Hey, I'm about out of time, so let me give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. And if you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the law hour website is updated weekly. and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.